get going now. My name's Mitch, and I guess I've met most of you before, but this is my contact information here. So feel free, please feel free to contact me anytime for any reason. I love helping people any way I can. And in China, you know, all over people are uses, you know, Telegram and Facebook Messenger and Hangouts and all these different things. And in China, everyone uses WeChat. Everyone. If they can afford a smartphone, they use WeChat. So that's my WeChat ID. If you're ever in China, you'll need that too. And but I keep it going all the time because I go to China for a month or two or three sometimes every year, and I've been doing that since 2003. And I'm in contact with people from China all the time. And from going there every month, every year for at least a month, I have my own warped perspectives of what goes on in China. And I'm not necessarily correct, but it seems to resonate even with people in China. So I like sharing this stuff. And China does have a lot to offer. So I do want to start off, since you're a captive audience, with this slide, because I like ranting about this. So I am a happy worker. Most people on our planet are not happy workers. When we think of a worker, we usually think of someone toiling away doing something they don't even want to do, and they're only doing it because they're getting, hopefully, enough money in order to buy food and shelter. And they're spending so much time doing all these things that are just so, at best, innocuous, things that aren't helping each other but not hurting each other. But so many things we do for work are actually hurting ourselves and the people around us and even the planet. So I think it's really important that we find a way to get the resources we need in our lives in a way that's good for us and hopefully good for the people around us and even good for the planet. Because we spend a third of our lives at work. A third, you know, like 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day. If you're in Silicon Valley, they expect you to come on weekends. And then we sleep 8 hours a day. And if you're like the average American who watches an average of 6.5 hours of screen time every day, when do you have time to even explore, let alone do something that you feel is worthwhile? So, but I actually turn TVs off for a living, and I like my job. So I invented this keychain called TV Be Gone, and I started selling them in 2004, and I didn't do it to make money. I just did it because I fucking hate TV. I'm a TV addict. I watched TV every waking moment of my childhood. I was totally depressed. I tried to escape life into it, and it took over my life. And as an adult, I learned I can quit. I can actually explore and try things that I actually love doing and learn to live a life I love. But when they started popping up everywhere in public places, you know, I got rid of them for my apartment. TV. I got rid of TV from my apartment in 1980. And somewhere around the early 90s, they started popping up everywhere in public. Can you imagine that the world at one point did not have TVs everywhere you look? It's kind of hard to imagine at this time because every pub, every restaurant and cafe, every airport, every train station, and on, schools. So anyways, when I started seeing them everywhere, I couldn't do anything about them. But I am a geek, so I knew that I could create a remote control to turn them all off, so I did. And it turned out that other people liked that idea, oddly enough. And since 2004, when I started selling them, I've sold 500,000 of them. And it's the only way that me and 12 friends have made money for the last 13 years. Yeah. So, and it was just because I explored and found some things I like. This was one of them, and it really took over a big chunk of my psyche, and I was obsessed with it. And it turned out other people liked it too, because, you know, if just think about all the cool things you do. If you come up with something that you really are obsessed with and love, chances are other people find meaning in that as well. And if people find meaning in you doing something, those are the kind of things that people might pay you to do. And maybe you could make a living doing the cool thing that you think is, you know, just totally awesome. So this actually does tie into what I want to talk about, which is really like hackerspaces and the whole hacker maker scene in China, and about what China has to offer, you know, each of us. You know, China's this amazing place. Of course, it has a big central government, and as all central big central governments go, it's not really there for the benefit of its people. But unlike like my country, people, and in many places in Europe, people in China actually do get some interesting things from their government. My government, I just give them my tax money, and they blow up people in other countries. So anyways, doing TV Be Gone got me invited to my first hacker conference, and it changed my life forever in so many ways. But finding my first hacker conference was totally amazing, because here's a place like here. Here's like 100, 150 people who are here who have things they really love doing. They don't necessarily have time to do it all the time, but when we're here, we're sharing enthusiastically all these things that we love doing with each other and learning from each other. And and it's really high because of that, and that's one of the reasons I think we're all here. Sadly, that's not what it's like in society at large, where most people, as I said earlier, are just toiling away at some activity that other people are paying them to do, hopefully enough so they can get some food and shelter so they can live their lives. After the conference is over, you have to go back into that world and then wait for the next conference. My third hacker conference was Chaos Computer Camp in 2007, and there was a talk, amongst all the other cool things, there was a talk about how to start your own hackerspace. And I thought that was really an amazing idea, because then maybe we don't have to wait till the next hacker conference just to be surrounded by people who really love what they do. We can have a community all day, all night, all year round of people encouraging each other to explore and do things that are really cool, that are really wonderful, that we find meaning in doing. And that inspired me to start NoiseBridge and some other people who were at Chaos Communications Camp 2007 started NYC Resistor and Hack DC in NYC Resistor in New York City, Hack DC in Washington, DC, and Hacktory in Philadelphia. We all helped each other, and other within a year, there were a whole bunch of other people who had been watching this. Within a year, there were 100 new hackerspaces. Within a year after that, there were 500 more. And we still keep helping each other, and it's just really amazing. And we get together just with this idea that we're going to enjoy it. And even if they're doing something as simple as soldering, like these people are doing, look how happy they are. That's what happens when people come together just wanting to share what they do and enjoy the time together. But anyways, this all grew. Teaching soldering at NoiseBridge was just a handful of people. I've been doing it every Monday since 2007, and it just grows. And now I can do up to like 50 some people at a time, whatever, big, small, it doesn't matter, as long as we're sharing something that's meaningful for us. And but going to these things, it started getting me invited to go all over the place. I started, of course, manufacturing is much less expensive in China, as we all probably know. I tried to manufacture in China, in the US locally, but the price was three times as much and the quality was about half as much. Not a good combination. So I found people in China who could do it for me for really good quality, for a really good price, who treated their people well, paid them well, and treated the environment well. It was not easy to find that in 2003 when I was doing that, but it was possible, and I did that. And the difference between that company and the cheapest company I could find was 25 cents per unit. And I thought it was worth paying 25 cents per unit in order to treat people well. If I'm making this thing to make lives better for people, I don't want to do that at the expense of others, right? So anyways, China is one of the places I was going. I've been giving talks all around the world and workshops. People started asking me to do that in China. Of course, I'm talking about hackerspaces because they're awesome. And the more I did that, the more people in China ask me to do that, and other people start talking about hackerspaces in China. Some people open hackerspaces in China. There's some really cool ones there. And there's all these people talking about hackerspaces in China, and it filters up to local governments who see all the benefits of hackerspaces for economic development. And also for education, and they tell their superiors, and it eventually filtered all the way up to the top of government, and I've got a picture for that too. So anyways, you know, doing workshop tours all over the planet, including China. This is the first Maker Faire kind of thing there, called a Maker Carnival in 2012, and doing manufacturing in China. This is my first company. And I met all of these people, and with my pidgin Mandarin, could kind of talk to them. And they're actually really cool people, and they make enough money from 1 3-month contract to pay for their living and their family for the rest of the year. And they're allowed up to 2 contracts per year, so they actually get a bunch of extra money, and it's pretty cool at this place. Other places aren't so good. Yeah, just, you know, a little taste of the manufacturing testing is kind of weird, because these people have all used remote controls before, but they never did that at work. But here they are testing TVB Gone at the end of the assembly line, and of course it does work. And then after that they package it, and this is my new company, and this was when I was in China just like 3 months ago, making the latest batch of TVB Gones that includes all of the latest off codes for all the new TVs out there. And my new company is much smaller and more responsive to the needs of me and my small company. Anyways, here's the first big talk I gave. This was one of the Make magazine kind of China, called Guake. And they invited me to the Panasonic Center, and it was standing room only, and I'm talking about hacker spaces and talking about things in ways Chinese people really don't like to hear, which makes people pay attention to me, because like, oh, there's this white guy there. He's saying weird things. Come on, check it out. And it works. And this grew from like just talking to university students and little kids at school to things like this. And then in October, talking to 1,200 bureaucrats. And the translator was doing a terrible job, and I could tell, because when I would say something, they just had blank faces. And they didn't laugh, and they didn't look surprised when I said death. And Chinese people hate hearing that word. So, but anyways, I think they kind of got the idea of what I was trying to say, because afterwards, people actually were asking me questions that were worthwhile. But this stuff really did filter. It's a huge part of the Chinese government pushing what they call maker education and the maker movement, or even the hacker movement. And it filtered all the way up to the top of government. And here is the head of state, Premier Li, visiting a hackerspace started by the person who runs Seed Studio. That's with 3 E's. It's a first open hardware company in China. And they opened up a hackerspace so that people could like get opportunities from them. And Premier Li visits it and makes this huge media show out of the whole thing, and says, this, hackerspaces, is the future of China. You know, and not to be left behind, the president of my country at the time, not nearly as bad as the current one, created the White House Maker Faire. And he's looking at this marshmallow launcher that this incredibly cool geeky kid created, Joey Hudi. So hackerspaces, I'm talking about hackerspaces. All of us here probably know it, so I won't harp on this, but hackerspaces really are about community. It's about community. It's not about making a thing. Making a thing is really cool, and we can all make things. It's really wonderful, and we have fun doing that, but that's not what it's about. It's important, and that's what brings us together, but we're there as a community to encourage people to explore and try things and learn and share with each other. And you know, when people do that, again, like, here's some people soldering. I mean, that's what I do, right? I like soldering. And look, they're happy. And people come together, and when they come together in this community and they do want to make some things, of course, they want tools, and it can be all sorts of different tools. This is one in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that does things all mechanical, and they do amazing mechanical things, big and small, and they've got all the tools to do that. And I want to say what my definition of hacking is, because, you know, most people in the world, including China, when they hear the word hacker or hacking, they think of people who break into other people's computers and steal shit. That's what the mainstream media called people doing that in the 1990s, and that's what they still call it. So, but as it was defined by the Model Train Club in MIT in 1953, before most people even heard of computers, hacking is taking resources, devoting it to your project, using those resources any way you want to make your projects cool, seeing what works, what doesn't work, and then sharing it with others. And doing that overall because it's incredibly enjoyable. We all love doing that stuff. And there's that one. And we do it because it's totally wonderful. We love doing that. And it really is more than just doing things in a certain way. It's a way of...
I guess the battery's out. So I think I can talk loud. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Cool. So it's really a way of looking at things. It's a way of living. It's a way of being. When you do this, you might find things that you really love, and other people probably...
If you do this, you'll probably find things you love, and then chances are good that other people might love it too, and then you can have an idea then for a startup that isn't stupid. I don't know if you've noticed, but like close to 100% of all the startups are stupid. That's because the first thing they think of is, I'm going to get rich. How am I going to get rich? I'll do a startup. What should the startup be about? People are doing apps. I'll make an app. Yeah, it'll be orange. Whatever. But you know, if you explore and find things you love, other people might love it too, and then you might find an opportunity, and then you can start a startup that isn't stupid. You don't need to do that when you hack. You absolutely don't need to do that. But if you want to do anything entrepreneurial, you definitely have to start by hacking. You have to make time and then explore and find things. And so all good entrepreneurs are good hackers. To be a good hacker, you can do so many different things. Being a good entrepreneur is just one thing you could do. So this excites bureaucrats. Of course, anything can be hacked. Electronics, computers, and all these things. We think of it with art and science and craft and ourselves. I learned to be a person who loves living my life, starting from a total depressed blob of a kid. The first half of my life was awful. But I learned to live a life I love by hacking my life. We can hack our communities, our societies, and the planet, and everything needs to be hacked because everything needs people like us and pretty much everyone to join in and teach and share and learn and see things in this way that we can share our resources and help our poor little planet out and our people and other beings on it. So anyways, there are a bunch of tools, anything from electronics and fabrication and little hand tools and art, and there's art class at Noisebridge, cooking. There's lots and lots of wonderful cooking going on in unique and novel ways and even wonderful traditional ways. And it's for people of all ages. It's for everybody on our planet, race and age and everything. It doesn't matter. And this is what makes hackerspaces fantastic learning environments, because people explore, they're courage to explore, they find things they love. Once you find a project you love, you're super motivated to make it as awesome as possible, so you learn what you need in order to make it as awesome as possible, and you're motivated to learn those things, unlike at schools where you're only doing it because you're told you have to. But overall, they're supportive communities for people to explore and do what people really find meaning in doing. And this is how innovative things come about. Innovation is a buzzword now, bureaucrats are primed to hear that word. If you use that word along with the word creativity and economic development and education, then maybe they'll even let go of some currency and let some people who actually want to do something worthwhile do those worthwhile things. And I found this works incredibly well in China, but in many places around the world. So when people explore and do things that they really want to do, they're doing things that are perfect for them, and if it's perfect for them, it's probably perfect for the people in their surrounding community. And that's something that, again, maybe there's opportunity in that, but it's unique. It's something really cool, and these are just people working on drones in Magdeburg. But yeah, it's perfect for your own community, and maybe it's good for starting a startup that isn't stupid. So China, back to China, and all that stuff applies to talking to bureaucrats in China. There's a lot of stuff in every country, especially one that's been around for 2.5 millennia without a break. It has a lot to offer, not only the people there, but the world. But there's some economic problems there that they're facing. The biggest economic game so far there has been Western companies going there and paying Chinese manufacturers to make things for the Western companies that are then shipped halfway around the world. Well, that brought the Chinese economy from almost feudal up to one of the biggest economies in the world in a very short amount of time. And with that, there's a rising middle class, there's a strong economy there. People, of course, are demanding and should be paid much more. So labor costs are much higher now. And also, their economy is doing better, so the exchange rate is going the wrong way for Westerners to go over there and be economical. Energy prices keep going up, so shipping costs halfway around the world are higher. All of that adds up to things not going too well economically. Also, like everywhere in the world, their education system is really problematic. They have been doing examinations there for over 1,000 years, and they're hyper-focused on getting the best test scores so they can get into the best kindergarten. And if they're good in kindergarten, they can do the best test scores to get into the best primary schools and secondary schools and universities. Like the university that I'm often helping with education there to turn it into more project-based, 2 million people apply every year and they only accept 2,000. There's a lot of competition. It's really intense, and they focus only on the test and not about learning. And it's gotten so bad that there are these cram schools now that train people into not thinking when they're learning and taking these tests. Because if you think, you take more time per question, and if you take more time per question, you don't do as well as the people who don't think. So they're training a generation of people to not think. Not a good situation. So people who run the show there, all these people, really want to make things better. And they're seeing hackerspaces as a way of doing that. But anyways, you know, this is what could happen in the eyes of bureaucrats, and they don't want to see that happen. And when there are problems to solve, there are opportunities. And China, with 1 billion people and all the manufacturing and all the parts and materials coming from China, and an education system, even if it's focused on tests, there's a lot of resources there to use for them and the world. But some things need to shift in China, because they've been focusing on these tests for so long, like I said, that that's become problematic. Creativity is really scary there, because there, failure's scary everywhere. But there, if you fail, even if you don't do something perfect, it's so shameful. People are afraid of even trying something without knowing they're going to be really good at it. And they can't be really good if they're first starting, because when you first start, you suck. You have to spend 10,000 hours doing it, and then you become great. And if you love it, then you become really great. So anyways, all of these things need a little bit of a shift, and that's why they were calling for outsiders like me and other people to go in there and talk crazy talk. And it seems to resonate, and a lot of people there are ready, and all it needs is some weirdo to come along, just poke, and people have permission, and hackerspace starts. And there's art all over the place. And it's been really cool to see these things happen. And once there's people exploring and finding cool things, then finding ideas that might be worthwhile for a startup and that might have some possibility of success as a result, then we can have a co-working space where people can bring their little company into reality and even get training for specific things for their company. And that's what incubators are for, trading some equity for that training. And China is looking to this as part of their future, and same with economically depressed areas in the United States and in Europe. And I'll just poke at education again, because most of us experience education that looks more like this. And it's all become about tests, and tests aren't learning. If you learn to do well on a test, that means you're a good test taker. That school in China, the one I mentioned, is called Tsinghua. They are the best test takers in the planet. If you ask one of those people, okay, here's a few things, and I've got this problem to solve, what would you suggest to start working on this problem? They look like you're about to shoot them. They're terrified of that. But if you ask them, answer these 50 test questions, they're like, they're on it. So anyways, education doesn't have to be about taking tests, which is supposed to be about evaluating learning, but it's not about learning anymore, it's about the tests. But bureaucrats like that. But now some bureaucrats in high places in many countries around the world are actually pushing for real education, and project-based learning really works. So making that part of your education is good. So a lot of schools, not only in China, but all over the world, are having hacker spaces as part of their education, because education can look like this. And it should. So hackerspaces are becoming part of schools. Again, when you explore and find things, you find projects you love and you're motivated to take a class. Like when I was in undergrad and I was working on my music synthesizer on the side at this teeny little lab that didn't give me any credit in school, but it was a great place where a whole bunch of geeky people came together and we all helped each other with our projects, doing robots, and I was doing music synthesizer, and someone was even making a flying machine. And this is all in like the 1980, right? And we were doing innovative stuff for back then, and it was really cool, whereas every other lab was doing military stuff funded by the U.S. military. They were doing stupid shit like missile guidance systems, while we were actually doing something worthwhile. And I found that I didn't know enough in order to make really awesome, nasty noises with my synthesizer. So suddenly, the digital signal processing class was something I wanted to take rather than something I had to take. That's because project-based learning is an incredible motivator, as we all know from the projects we do at our various hackerspaces or in our communities. So, and all of this that I've been talking about is why hackerspaces have grown from about 40 or so in 2007 to over 3,500. And this is actually an old picture from hackerspaces.org. Because now China is just as obliterated with little dots as Europe and North America. Because this guy visited a hackerspace, Tsinghua, in Shenzhen, China, and made a big media show out of it and said, this hackerspace is the future of China for economic development and education. And so every bureaucrat in China knows that they have to start a hackerspace in their local area. But they don't know what hackerspaces are, so they're building spaces that look like this. They're empty co-working spaces. And they think that if they build a thing that looks like it belongs in Silicon Valley, or what they believe think that it looks like something from Silicon Valley, because they've never been to Silicon Valley, but they believe that if they build a building that looks Silicon Valley-ish, that magic will happen just like in Silicon Valley. It doesn't work that way. Silicon Valley happened because there were a whole bunch of weirdos. So this is San Francisco, right? This is a place where weirdos collect. A whole bunch of weirdos in the 1970s wanted computers for their home. No one thought of weird stuff like that back then, but these people thought of it, and they thought the technology was good enough, and they got together. They couldn't do it on their own. They got together in community, the Homebrew Computer Club, and they figured out many ways to do it, and some of those companies still exist. One is the biggest capitalized company in the planet now. because people explored and found things they loved and then helped each other in community to make it happen. And that's what needs to happen there. And there are cool hackerspaces there. And here's just a few pictures from some cool places. I mean, this should look familiar to all of us. There's a lot of cool stuff happening there. And these are just some of the places that I've been to recently. And, in the Chai Hua. When bureaucrats make a big deal of something, there is possibility. And in China, there's ton of money coming down from the top. Unfortunately, it's going into the hands, usually, of people who are building those stupid empty co-working spaces. But there are a lot of people who can take that money, who care, who know, who understand, who want to help others, who can build community from the bottom up to make something cool happen. Things like this, rather than this. So China does have lots of resources. There's manufacturing. If you make something and you want to share it with the world, there's places now around the world, there's places in Germany that are actually quite competitive with China manufacturing now, and that's going to start happening more and more as China gets even better economy. But still, if you're going to make 500 or more of something to share with the world, to make money or otherwise, whether it's open source or not. I mean, everything I do is open source. TBGon, that I've made a living with for the last 13 years, me and 12 friends, a sustainable business, is open source. And it works great that way because I want people to turn off TVs. The more people that do it, the better. And the more excited they are, the more they talk about TBGon, the more people buy my thing. How can that be bad? You know, it works great. And anyways, there's open source companies in China now because it makes sense. All the copycat things, they don't call it open source, but it essentially is. They all share all the information with each other. It's all available for free online, and they share that stuff freely. You have to be able to read Mandarin and talk Mandarin because that's the only language they do it in. But it's all there. It's an amazing ecosystem. And you can find companies that treat people well, pay them well, treat the environment well, and give you good quality and good price. And the difference in price is minimal from the worst and the best companies. And Shenzhen is a pretty amazing place. This is the beginning of a video of a friend of mine from Noisebridge who, in the markets in Shenzhen, built his own iPhone just by buying parts there. And he has the video that went viral and like 5 million people have seen it. It's kind of crazy. And when he walks around Shenzhen, people point at him. And, so Shenzhen has this area called Huachongbei, which has everything you can imagine for electronics. And it's outrageously cheap. And it's really fun to go there. And, you know, not just LEDs and tools, but, you know, just anything. And if you go there and you're even decent at haggling and struggling with hand waving, trying to communicate with translate program with Mandarin and whatever language, it's really fun. Huachongbei, it's just zillions and zillions of these things. This is just one corner of one floor of one building out of this whole area of town. It's totally cool. And there's all these maker festivals that are really huge. It's really fun to check those out. There's all those cool hacker spaces. There's schools and universities that teach people how to use CNC mill, and you get to actually hands-on to learn these things. It's incredible what you can learn just by going there for a little while. They also have some of the most amazing signs on the planet. This is, like, I think my favorite. This sign is bigger than this, and it says this on it. Nobody knows what it means. And some of the signs are kind of scary. That's inside of a PCB manufacturing company. Doesn't it make you warm and fuzzy? China's not all good. But stuff like that's disappearing, but stuff like this is everywhere. And there are a lot of really cool companies there, including several open hardware companies. DF Robot makes all sorts of resources for people to make robots, and the owner of the company came from a hackerspace in Shanghai, Xinjiang, and MakeBlock is a company that makes resources. They started with a incubator that I'm a mentor for called Hacks, H-A-X. And they had a crowdfunding campaign that was successful, and now they're a really big company, and they treat their, this is their company. This is where they work every day. This is like a hackerspace. It's really a fun place to be. And Seed Studio is the first open hardware company, and it's they help people make even small quantities of electronic projects and mechanical projects. They're a good resource. China also has a lot of really amazing artists. I don't know if you know who this guy is that I met. His name's Ai Weiwei. He was arrested and he had his head beaten in by the Chinese government. And he's not really a fan of the Chinese government anymore, even though he lives there. They took his passport away, but they gave it back. So mixed bag with China. Some things are opening up, some things are closing. Not as bad as my country, I think. But anyways, they've got better trains than Switzerland. No shit. You know, they do go up to 400 kilometers an hour, and they can even stop. And food. Everywhere you go, people eat food. That's the way, if you have any kind of dealing with any company, the first thing they do after just meeting and saying hi is they bring you to dinner and you have stuff like this. And it's so cheap and so good. And everywhere in China, it's different. You know, saying Chinese food is kind of like saying European food. And it's all good. It's just amazing. And I'm vegan, and like it's super easy for me to get fantastic food everywhere. It's just great. And there's co-working spaces that are really fun places, as well as all the hacker spaces and incubators like Hacks that I'm a mentor for. There's also this website called Taobao. Huachongbei, that electronics market in Shenzhen, is amazing, but Taobao is kind of like Amazon, sort of, but a Chinese version. You can buy absolutely anything there, and it will be delivered to your door, perhaps the same day, but definitely the next day. One time, a few years ago, we saw that tablets were super cheap, and we thought they were really crummy, but they're really cheap. So for like $30, a bunch of people ordered a few different ones to see if any of them actually work. It turns out they all do. This was several years ago, and now they're even cheaper. We ordered them from Taobao, and they at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, and they arrived before 8 a.m. on Sunday. They've got this infrastructure down. But it's not just electronics. As you can see, like dresses and dish soap and luggage, anything, absolutely anything, including industrial, like a big industrial crane or a bulldozer. And they'll deliver it to your door. So I have this project that you can play with it in there if you want to. It's a music synthesizer kit. And all the parts, if I source all the parts in the United States, it costs me $12.85, I think it came out to. If I do it on AliExpress, it's about $8. But if I do it on Taobao, it's even cheaper. So you can see, these prices are amazingly cheap. If you do these little speakers from Mouser or DigiKey, these cost $7 US, $7.30, I think. If you do it from AliExpress, it's considerably less, but if you do it from Taobao, it's 30 cents, 29 euro cents. And same with ATmega 328, the microcontroller inside of Arduinos. If you buy them one from the US, it's about $2.50. If you buy them from AliExpress, it's less. If you buy them from Taobao, it's 37 cents. You know, and you do the whole thing. And also, there's PC board places. This is an open hardware company started by Dangerous Prototypes, who became famous for doing a thing called Bus Pirate. But Ian went to China to do stuff and work with Seed Studio, who sold Bus Pirate. There he met his boyfriend, and they've been living there ever since, and they've started all these different resources for people, including really cheap PCBs that you can order anywhere in the world. Dirty PCB is just one resource that does that. Seed Studio does it, and so do others. But using these kind of resources, you can see the difference in prices. between sourcing things in US or AliExpress or the cheapest Taobao. And when I was in China, I got my next batch there so I can make hopefully my next versions of the music synthesizer kit cheaper so that other people can afford it. To make all of this, you know, I've been going to China every year because of manufacturing. And when I saw that Bunny Huang, who's this amazing engineer, hacker, who first hacked the Microsoft Xbox, yeah, the Xbox. He became super famous for that, and he does all this manufacturing, does consulting for people. He goes to China all the time and does stuff. He thought it'd be cool to offer a trip to China, and a bunch of people I know went on that trip, and they really loved it, and I thought I would do the same thing. He wasn't going to do anymore, so I started Hacker Trips to China. And the first hacker trip to China was in 2009. There were no hacker spaces in China. And I was just beginning to give talks like I was talking about all this stuff. And but we had a great time visiting manufacturers and Huachongbei, the electronics market, and other things that are of geeky interest. And then meeting geeky people who would show us what they love about their hometowns wherever we go. And but it grew in popularity, and then I met this guy as a professor at Tsinghua University, the one I mentioned earlier, and he's holding this sign up at Beijing International Airport for us. And he's saying, I hope this doesn't get too popular a picture because I might get in trouble. But by now, the head of state, Premier Li, is talking about hackerspaces, so he won't get in trouble. He'll get a feather in his cap. But we took this funny picture, the first hacker trip, and wearing Mongolian hats with red stars on them, and at a temple. And you can visit manufacturers. All you have to do is contact them and say, can we visit? They say, sure, wear these bunny suits and you can come in. And it's fun. So, you know, and then giving talks at schools, people who want to on the trip can share their enthusiasm for their weird projects and show that if you do something, it's not because you're guaranteed to make money and you're guaranteed to succeed and all this high status stuff that people strive for. You do it because it's enjoyable. And then maybe if you want to, then you can try something and maybe it'll have some possibility of success, but you have to start by exploring. And so we're sharing with all this. And this was last year at, what's the name of the place? Oh yeah, Zhangzhou High School number 2, 20,000 students. It's kind of a big deal. So we were talking to all these 20,000 students, and they know English there. It's amazing. These little kids, well, not so little, high school kids, know English. And they were into it. They totally loved it. And I have no idea what Zhangzhou High School number 1 is, but the principal of this school has been pushing for project-based learning and wants to get away from tests. He's been pushing this, and he's got the friend of his in the Ministry of Education for this area of China. And they're pushing for this. It's really difficult, though, because students, before they were students, well, if they were ever before students, because parents, before the kid's even born, is planning the kid's life out, getting them into the best kindergarten, to get into the best school, et cetera, to the best universities. You know, and this is all before they're born, so the kid only knows test, 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 test. And if you say, okay, let's take time off of these tests and actually do something worthwhile, and the kids are going, yeah, this is fun, but what about the tests? And they tell their parents, and the parents are like, what about the tests? So it's a problem. It's a big problem. How do we shift that? So we had a meeting there, and they invited us to all this, and, you know, and it leads to things that look like this, and, you know, and talking to lots of bureaucrats. So it's actually fun talking to these people. They actually do want to make a positive social change. And there are people high up in government listening to them, and they want to deal with these social problems. And I think that's awesome. Like, that is happening in other places. Like, Luxembourg invited me to go over because they want every single school, public school in Luxembourg, to be project-based and have hackerspaces as part of their curriculum. Of course, that's easier in Luxembourg, where there's a total of 43 schools. In China, there's something like 2.5 million, if I'm remembering correctly. But yeah, it's really amazing. So anyways, just in case you're interested, I'm planning another hacker trip to China. And this is the best machine porn video I think possible. This is slow motion of a spring making machine that we visited last year. This actually, a spring is made once per second. Yeah, machine porn, it's wonderful. But anyways, if you're interested, go to noisebridge.net and search for China trip, and everyone's welcome. And I'm also working on a hacker in residence program. Tsinghua University is helping with this to a little degree, and this is the kickoff of their hacker in residency. And I was the first hacker in residence there, and we did this kung fu hacking thing, which was really silly but a lot of fun. And by the end of August, I hope to have hackerinresidence.org going, so that anywhere in the world, Europe, China, North America, South America, Antarctic, if there's anyone there, an organization can have a free page. There's no advertising. It's just something I'm doing because I want to help spread the joy. We were doing it on hackerspaces.org, but it's kind of cumbersome there, but there's a lot of cool stuff there because it's a wiki. But having hackerinresidence.org, an organization has an about page, and then they can have residency opportunity pages, and they decide how people want to apply. And you've all heard of artists in residence, maybe, where an artist can come to a community, share their thing, mentor people, learn stuff from that community, and go home or somewhere else and share what they learned and cross-pollinate. It doesn't have to be just visual art, though. It can be everything that we all do. And a lot of these places, like Tsinghua, has a huge budget. They paid me, not a huge amount, but $800 a month, plus housing, plus a bicycle, plus a gym pass, plus food. So, all my expenses paid, plus the $800, which goes a long way in China, and plus my expenses going there and back. And some places have even more budget than that. And some places, it's just a little hackerspace. Oh, we don't have any budget. We can't pay for your travel, but we have a desk and some tools and cool people. But whatever, it's up to each organization what they want to offer and what's required. At Tsinghua, the only thing I had to do was have one workshop. But of course, while I'm there, I did lots because it was fun. And I worked on lots of my own projects while I was there too. So anyways, it's just sort of a little bit of what I do related to China and elsewhere. And I like doing this stuff because I think our planet is really in need of some help. People on the planet need some help. What percentage of people on our planet think that their life is awesome? I think very small percentage, and that's really got to change. I would love to see 100% of people on our planet feeling that their lives are amazing. Right now there's, 4,000 or so hackerspaces on the planet. Maybe that's 100,000 people that have opportunities that they have to offer and have the benefit of this kind of community. But we need millions of these for people to be able to have these kind of opportunities. There's 7 billion of us here. And maybe through all of this, we can find means of using getting whatever resources we need in order to live lives that are totally amazing, without spending all of our time working some job that we, don't like or just is okay. Or even if we like it, doing it too much, whatever. I mean, there's so many possibilities. Let's explore them. Let's make opportunities for everyone. And that's what I want to do for as long as I'm alive. So here's my contact information again, and thanks for your time. Yeah, so maybe got time for any questions, if there's any, or comments?
You talked about the government in China supporting various hackerspaces, but when we were were there and went to Xinjiang, I think it's called. Yeah, and they told us that they didn't want any support from the government because they would have to do things that they didn't want to. And I thought it was a similar situation in Shenzhen DIY, although I wasn't quite sure because of the language barrier. But I want to ask you what your take was on that these hackerspaces they didn't necessarily like involvement with the government.
Thank you. Great question. We were talking about that in the Hackerspace Design Pattern discussion as well. Money comes with strings, and there's trade-offs. So some strings are more galling than others. But there's definitely, like Noisebridge, we don't take any money from anybody unless there's no strings. And I mean, no. If they ask, it's like, here's $1 million, all you have to do is put our logo on the website, we'll say no. We don't need $1 million. We already have enough the way we're doing things. Xinjiang is the first hackerspace. They definitely wanted to do it on their own, especially back then when it wasn't supported at all. They didn't know what government officials would be like. They wanted to do things their own way. And if you get government money, you definitely have to do things that the government wants. And it might be just filling out lots and lots and lots of forms. You know what bureaucracy is like here? They've been doing it for 2.5 millennia. They're good at it. And I think they invented it. So, there's lots of forms to fill out. Plus, they can say, we don't like this one thing you're doing. You need our money. Stop that one thing and we'll give you the money. Right? Or they can say, you know, what you're doing is cool, but you're not doing enough of this thing. You know, it should be up to the community what people want to do in their own community and not up to the funding source. So there are trade-offs. There is some money available now for people to basically do whatever they want. There might be forms to fill out. But there are some really cool spaces that I've visited that have started with government money, and it's filtered down, so it's just a local bureaucrat. Really, the only string that I'm aware of is that you have to be able to have the CCTV, the big TV network, come in with the bureaucrat and shaking the bureaucrat's hand while everyone in China smiles at you. So, you got to be careful of that. Funding sources do matter, which is why, you know, I quit helping Maker Faire when they took $10 million grant from the U.S. military, because I don't want to help the U.S. military with the cool things that I do. If they want to take it, that's up to them, but I'm not going to give it to them. So it's important to think about these things, so thanks for asking about that. Any other questions?
You talked about the cheap manufacturing and the PCB manufacturing, for example, and that there are companies that do things better and that treat their employees good, and some do not. And my question is, as a consumer here in Europe, when, for example, ordering PCBs, which I recently did for absolutely dirt cheap, and I can't imagine anyone is getting treated fairly or paid well, how would you go about choosing someone there that treats them well without actually being there?
Yeah, that's really important to think about too. With PCBs, they're pretty bad all the way around. I went to the Seed Studio. The guy who started that, he calls himself Eric. Eric really cares about this stuff. He treats his employees really well, but they don't make their own PCBs. They make their own. Once they have the PCB, they can have the pick and place machine and all the super fancy stuff to do everything else. They don't make their own PCBs, so they looked around and tried to find the best ones they could find, and the best one they could find was the one where that weird sign was with the eyeballs. They found one better than that the next year, and we visited that one as well, but it's still, You know, if you go to a place in Europe or in the US, there's government agencies that are overseeing things, and even though they're underfunded, the manufacturers don't want their employees to be, or the companies don't want their employees to be harmed, so they enforce people to use safety equipment. At the current PCB place for Seed Studio, they have all the safety equipment there, like masks and ear protection in places that are loud, and other eye protection. But people aren't using them, and they don't force people to use them. It's easier not to use them just to do your job and then go home. Seemingly, it's not easier to spend some amount of time in the hospital dealing with all the problems that result from that, I imagine. But yeah, so this is a problem. So that's the best that they could find, and I don't know how to find any better ones myself, but the one that my manufacturer uses, basically the same as the one in the Seed Studio uses, but in Shanghai rather than Shenzhen. I actually went to China to visit all these places. And in 2003, there was no talk about this stuff on the internet. That's when I was setting up stuff for TV Be Gone. And I talked to a bunch over the phone and email, and a bunch told me what I wanted to hear. And when I went to visit them, several were like black pits of despair. They were really awful. They were really awful. But three were good, and I went with the one that made, you know, for me, it was really an advantage. They made a third of all the remote controls in the planet. So they actually helped me a lot with what I do. And their PCB play, they made their own PCBs, so they did pretty good, and they enforce their safety a little more than others. With the company I have now, they contract that out, and they are kind of like that Seed one. The safety stuff's there. People are well trained, they're well paid, they're treated well, but they don't enforce the safety standards. But if you don't go there, you don't know. Unless there's a network of people who are going there and looking and letting other people know, that's all you can do. So if you go with the cheapest, it doesn't mean it's the worst. Cheap doesn't, you know, there's not necessarily a correlation between price and quality, or price and how well they teach their, treat their employees. So yeah, you just have to either know yourself or know people who know. And that's all we can do at this point. Cool. Well, we're pretty much out of time anyways. There's 2 minutes left. But hit me up, email, here in person, WeChat if you have it, whatever. So thanks.